Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us in our Clinical Updates podcast. The goal of this series is to provide concise, on-the-go clinical updates on practice-relevant topics. Today, we have Dr. Claire Drum, a psychiatrist within CentraCare, who will discuss peripartum psychiatry. Please remember that there is a slide deck attached to this podcast sent via email, where 0.25 or a quarter AMA PRA Category 1 credits will be available for a limited time. If you would like to claim it, please complete the evaluation in the slides attached. Another disclosure is that Dr. Drum may discuss off-label use of medications for mood and anxiety. And other speakers, planners, and CME staff do not have any relevant financial relationships with the ineligible companies to disclose. So with that, hello, Claire, and welcome, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So let's get right into it. How would you define peripartum psychiatry?
Good question. So peripartum psychiatry is, I think, a label that we made for ourselves in psychiatry for the care of women surrounding pregnancy. So both before they're pregnant, throughout the pregnancy, and in the postpartum period. So with those different physiologic and social states, there are different considerations for diagnosis and for treatment options. So we kind of carved out our own little niche within psychiatry for those time points.
Yeah, and it's interesting because everything changes during pregnancy, and we must not forget that the brain chemistry so does. Has there been any developments over the last few years, I would say, without getting into too much detail about how we approach peripartum psychiatry in general?
I think the big development has mostly been that this is a thing, and that it's worth looking into, and that it's okay to provide treatment during pregnancy and during lactation if somebody's breastfeeding in the postpartum period. So kind of with that permission to treat, we've had a whole lot of new investigations and people trying to do more research into drug safety. There's been a lot of push from the governmental level, thanks to a lot of advocacy work, that this is a serious public health matter. Mental care during pregnancy and for families is very important for individuals and for our society. So with that, we've had a couple new exciting drugs on the market. There's brexanolone and zuranolone, which are medications specifically for postpartum depression. That's their only indication. They have a totally unique mechanism of action. So the hope is that we'll start seeing more and more things like that.
So when you say, because you started saying that the new development is that we treat it more seriously. I'll simplify it to that. What were we doing before?
Well, I think what we were doing before was saying, okay, I'll see you after you're pregnant.
Okay.
After you're done being pregnant.
That's simple enough.
Kind of thing. you know, in drug studies and randomized controlled trials, pregnancy is a reason for exclusion from study, and a lot of just reproductive age women, regardless of pregnancy status, were excluded. So there's none of this really good high quality data, RCT data on medications and pregnancy. And what we're left with is then case reports and then database reviews, pretty much. So not high quality.
So I'm gonna transpire a personal opinion here, but you know, I think in psychiatry, there has been an issue of more than pretty much anything in medicine, because it's not as tangible as the rest of medicine, of including more things. And in a way, I find that some people are labeled as anxiety while they are just going through moments of their life, right? You know, it happens. You're an adolescent, etc. So do you think that in this inclusion and pay more attention and not mislabeling, do you have any concerns with including people who are just going through the uncertainties, discomforts that depression carries? How do you distinguish that and you don't overdiagnose? Because then it's a stigmata that carries on.
Definitely. And that's a very fair criticism of the field of psychiatry, and specifically diagnostics in psychiatry, which are based pretty much entirely on the psychiatrist's ability to elicit and then collect symptoms into a diagnosis that makes sense in the social psychological context of a person's life. So if you're sloppy with your diagnosis, you're going to get a lot of over-treatment. And, you know, we say on our service, depression is a symptom. Depression is not a diagnosis. But that's up to the examiner to be really astute and careful with making the diagnosis, because that label has implications. So I think we try to take a really, not a reactionary approach of kind of collecting symptoms. And then in pregnancy, especially, there's a lot of adjustment. So the focus, at least for me, when I think about diagnosis and then when I think about treatment, is really paying attention to function and how those symptoms might be impacting somebody's life. So if there's no impact or a mild impact or even moderate, that changes the treatment. And we lean mostly towards psychotherapy, social supports. But if symptoms become severe, we do know that medications can reduce that severity to just improve function and improve the chances of engaging in these other kind of non-pharmacologic treatment options. So that's always a goal when we're talking about depression, anxiety.
So let me get a little more specific. You mentioned, so we are talking about peripartum psychiatry in general, but you mentioned depression and anxiety a couple of times. So right off the bat, would you move peripartum psychosis out of this discussion because it's more rare and so blatant that probably we don't need to talk about that right now and focus on anxiety and depression?
Well, not really. And I say that because, yes, it's very rare. Psychosis anywhere in the pregnancy postpartum period is quite dangerous. So psychosis is, you know, for psychiatrists, psychosis in pregnancy is one of the few psychiatric emergencies, you know, the other kind of being somebody who's actively, imminently suicidal. The risks of suicide and also infanticide in that case are profoundly high, and the delusions, it's usually a delusional predominance of symptoms, usually involve the pregnancy and the health of the pregnancy. So women can have a lot of strange actions or attempt to harm the pregnancy, or, you know, sacrifice the pregnancy in order to save the baby or something like that. So, but that is definitely very, very rare and is not going to be the standard. So most practitioners are going to be interacting with mood disorders, anxiety disorders. We actually see the incidence of obsessive compulsive disorder, especially in the postpartum period, is double that of women who are not pregnant or postpartum. So obsessive compulsive symptoms and the disorder are very, very common, and we probably miss quite a few of those.
So let's say we'll talk about anxiety and depression from the perspective of diagnostic and therapeutics. Where do we need to do better within CentroCare, would you say, and what's new for each realm?
So CentroCare is probably where the rest of the country is at, is that we've got, you know, every year we get new data, there are new studies, there are some in the last couple of years, very compelling ones that show that anxiety disorders, depressive disorders actually begin in the first trimester, persist throughout pregnancy, but we have this focus on the postpartum period. So we're actually not looking for the symptoms and screening until postpartum. And so we miss 8 months of symptoms that we could have treated. So now there are new mandates from ACOG, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, saying we need to start screening earlier in pregnancy, and we need to screening, you know, more often.
Those are like a standard of care?
Right, right. As now the standard of care, which of course is, you know, kind of this unfunded, unsupported mandate. So I think our system is where a lot of the rest of healthcare finds itself, is that there's this, you know, huge need. Yes, we see we need to start screening, treating, helping earlier, but how do we do that? We have very limited resources. We're getting more patients. We're getting all these pressures to see more and do more, but not having the support for that. So in psychiatry, we're trying to put our heads together of how can we spread our resources throughout the system. Are there different consultative or innovative care delivery models that we can access to try to meet this need while operating within our kind of existing confines.
You mean to manage or to diagnose?
My hope would be both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ideally, would you say there would be a screening tool of sorts that we could use,
mm-hmm.
that you could standardize?
Yeah, so there are some out there. There's the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale, EPDS. That's been in use pretty much everywhere. We do it here. That's focused on depressive symptoms. And I think we're primarily using that more towards the end of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of women will fill that out at pediatric well child checks when they bring their baby in, which is another kind of interesting side point is, you know, pediatrician's office are often where the symptoms are most evident when, you know, when mom is coming to the baby's mm-hmm. frequent appointments, but the mom is not the patient of the pediatrician. So what do you do with that? That's a rhetorical question.
Pediatricians are very used to parents and their psychiatric comorbidity, so I don't think they would miss that.
There are a few different peripartum anxiety scales that have actually been validated. I don't think really many systems are using those at all. But again, there is kind of this call that anxiety disorders are just as prominent in this period as depressive disorders. We need to be screening for anxiety. How do we support that? How do we do that? There's not an answer for that yet.
And what's new in therapeutics? You mentioned a couple of drugs, and if you could mm-hmm. give me a one line of the mechanism of action, that's interesting too.
So those are based on the neurohormone pregnenolone, which I think is related to progesterone.
Okay.
But pregnenolone has a high central nervous system penetrance. Other than that, we don't really know how or why it works, which is common for psychiatric medications. They think it influences more on kind of like a cellular signaling level, so pretty high up in the signaling pathways.
So nothing to do with SSRI kind of concept?
Nope. Doesn't work on the neurotransmitters directly at all, like reuptake inhibition, which is what most of our medications do.
Would you mind quickly talking about the safety of these medications during pregnancy, especially if we get better at screening and we catch them in the first mm-hmm. trimester, how will we go about SSRIs and the like?
Mm-hmm. So medications in general, they're all quite safe. You know, because we've gotten more interest in looking back at data and really trying to get better numbers and a better understanding of safety, we have over the last decade, a lot of new studies, pretty rigorous models that have tried to look at safety better. And what we find from the medications that treat depression, anxiety, so kind of SSRIs, SNRIs, is all of them are pretty safe. So meaning we look at kind of first trimester exposure risks, so the risks of congenital malformations.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no associated increased risk above the baseline risk for major malformation. So that's reassuring. The exception there being Paxil or paroxetine does have kind of an increase in fetal cardiac deficits. So we don't really use Paxil in pregnancy, or we try to avoid it. And then throughout the pregnancy, there's really no harm on the pregnancy, second and third trimester. After delivery, there is a risk that the infant will have some serotonin withdrawal symptoms. This happens mm-hmm. in about a third of babies. Those symptoms are irritability, fussiness, poor feeding, poor sleep. So the criticism there is that a newborn? Sounds like my kids.
Yeah.
Or is that directly due to the medication? And we think it's directly due to the medication. We do have of that data. The good news is that it's self-limited and results mm-hmm. with just supportive care of, you know, feed and snuggle baby. They're all safe in lactation. So they do not transfer. They all transfer into the breast milk, but not at a concerning rate. So kind mm-hmm. of American Academy of Pediatrics for all drugs has kind of this relative infant dose of less than 10%. So all SSRIs, SNRIs are well below that. Prozac or fluoxetine has about a 7% relative infant dose. So that's the highest one, but still less than that 10%.
And these two new drugs you mentioned, if you could say the names again, and are they FDA approved already?
Yes. So they're FDA approved only for postpartum depression.
Only for postpartum.
Yep. Brexanolone, not in pregnancy at all. Brexanolone, I have never used and I will never use. It's a infusion only. It's a 72-hour infusion and costs $70,000.
70.
Yes. So I think only a few academic centers in the country have access to that. Zuranolone is the oral pill, and that is going to come onto the market in early 2024. So we will see how that goes. But again, that is only postpartum depression is its only indication.
But what is their niche compared to SSRIs? I mean,
there's no comparison, no comparator studies.
So the only selling point would be if on a head-to-head they will happen to be better, because
right.
Otherwise you will have to sell to somebody a drug that you don't know how it works, and mm-hmm. people tend not to like that, especially these days.
Mm-hmm.
They might have a short life, right,
yeah.
kind of thing, if they don't show up. Major defense.
Right. And to me, I would personally want to see like zuranolone compared to ECT, because they're only using zuranolone in really severe depression. Like these are patients who would probably be psychiatrically hospitalized because the depression mm-hmm. is so severe. And to me, that's somebody that we would consider ECT for, which is very safe in lactation if mom is breastfeeding. So, and it works. 70% efficacy rate. So
as a last talking point, what would you like to share with your partners in the sense of this is what we would like to work on and let you know in the future, or this is what we would like to offer you, or please let us know in these kind of situations, send your patients, what would you like to advertise?
Ooh, okay. I'm going to try to make my list short. So one of my big sticking points is kind of, we get a lot of questions of what medication is safe, or we get patients referred who they've stopped all their medications once they find out they're pregnant. So one really key point here is that planning for safety of any medication, this is not just psychiatric drugs, begins before conception. So if you have a reproductive age woman who's taking medication, mm-hmm. The line is kind of always ask in the next year, are you planning to become pregnant? If not, how are you preventing pregnancy? And then start talking about medication safety with that in mind, that this person could be started on lithium or an anti-seizure medication for epilepsy, and then suddenly become pregnant and not know it until she's 14 weeks pregnant. So start thinking about medication safety and pregnancy ahead of time, so it's proactive and not reactive. Psychotropic medications are safe in pregnancy with very, very few exceptions. Pregnancy is also not the time for experimentation. So the best medication mm-hmm. in pregnancy is the one that has worked. And then we also want to think of exposure. So we don't want to try a bunch of different meds because then we're exposing the baby to lots of different substances. At the same time, we don't want to expose the pregnancy to untreated symptoms. So use the lowest dose of the medication that is effective, so you don't then expose to uncontrolled symptoms and the medication, and maximize the dose of each agent before you discontinue it and make sure you get the most that you can out of it. What we're doing at CentraCare is we've been offering kind of chart reviews where I can be requested to review a chart to comment on medication safety, like a patient's considering pregnancy, this is what they're on, what's the safety profile.
You mean this is an e-consult?
It's like a pre-e-consult because we're not billing for it. So it's free to the patient. So basically it functions as an e-consult. There's just not associated billing. I've so far been able to drop a note within 24 hours of looking at the chart. And I can get just kind of general recommendations of this is what I see in the chart. This is maybe the next step I would consider. But then I can also provide a lot of safety information on the current medication regimen too, which is often a big question.
Sounds to me you should be doing an e-consult for this.
Yeah, we will eventually.
Okay.
This is all brand new, so we're starting to ground up. We're hopeful in January as well to have some virtual appointments with myself where I can offer psychiatric care during pregnancy and up to 6 months postpartum. So we're working on getting that clinic set up. And then we do have a therapist, Angela Williams. My PowerPoint will have information on how to reach her, but she can see patients during pregnancy, on family birthing, and then in the NICU. So she's available to consult kind of throughout the pregnancy period.
So it sounds like this peripartum psychiatry is you, this is your, what a choice of words, your baby, and you're giving it shape kind of thing, right?
I think so. I think it's my baby. That was one of the hopes of me coming here, started here a couple of years ago, was to develop this kind of work at CentraCare.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your time and expertise, and of course, for everyone for connecting with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.